To talk about inviting Krishna to take the reins of your chariot. This is what happens in the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita was spoken some 5,000 years ago on a battlefield, the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Kurukshetra is a holy place. It was a holy place before the battle. It's still a holy place. It exists in India. You can visit. You should visit sometime if you go to India. In the Bhagavad Gita, we have the story of, it's actually in the Mahabharata. The Mahabharata is the greater history of India. All of this comes from the Sanskrit Vedas, which date back thousands and thousands of years, all written or spoken in the Sanskrit language. The Mahabharata tells the story of the Pandavas and the Kauravas. We might say the opposing elements, the opposing factions in the Bhagavad Gita, but they're related. They're cousins. Well, they're more than cousins. They're interrelated on many levels. But these are the two opposing factions in the Bhagavad Gita. The Pandavas were the rightful heirs to the throne at that time. I won't get into the whole history because that'll take an hour. So let us just say they were the rightful heirs and they were cheated out of the throne during a crooked gambling match with their cousins and rivals, the Kauravas. The Pandavas were also tricked into renouncing their kingdom and everything else they owned, and being banished or exiled to the forest for 14 years. And during the final year of exile, if they turned up and they were recognized, no matter where they were, then they'd add another 14 years on to the exile. So they had to go incognito in the final year, so as not to be recognized. And when you're five of the brightest stars walking the planet at the time, it's not always easy to disguise yourself. But they did it. Then they came back and they said, may we have our kingdom back? No, I'm afraid not. Not possible. Well, may we have, because we're five brothers. Yudhishthira was the oldest brother. He was the rightful heir to the throne. He would be the king. Well, may we have five villages, so we each, because we're Kshatriyas, we're rulers, we're kings, we're princes. Can we each rule a village? Just give us five villages from this extensive kingdom that we developed. Oh, no, not possible. Can't do it. Too much to give. So they went back and forth with diplomacy, with their cousins, the Kauravas. Of course, there was no diplomatic solution, or seemingly. And this too was a product of fate. It was a done deal. It was meant to be. It was a foregone conclusion that this battle was going to happen. Because Krishna says, yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyutanam adharmasya tadatmanam srijamyam. Whenever and wherever there is a rise in irreligion or amorality or actions against religious principles. When we say religion, we're not referring to a religion. We're referring to dharma. Dharma is what? The right thing to do. In any situation, there is a right thing to do. And that's what you're told in your heart. You know, your conscience, your intuition, your gut feeling that says, this is right, that's wrong. Everybody has this. This is God in the heart as Paramatma, Super Soul. In the heart, we have the Atma, the soul, the individual, your own identity, and the Parama Atma, Super Soul, God in the heart. That's how you know what's right. So, when there's a decline in dharma, or proper behavior, or duty, or good conscience, at that time I will come myself, Krishna says. God comes himself to sort things out, to help the devotees, the good people, those who are devoted, the people on the path of morality, people on the path of dharma, and to diminish the population of the materialists, the criminals, those who are adharmic, who are acting in contrary to dharma. I will advent myself. So that's why Krishna, who is God, happened to be on the planet at this time. The Bhagavad Gita is a conversation that took place on the battlefield prior to the battle. So that's what I want to talk about. So Arjuna had a choice. Krishna was also a prince. He built his own city off the coast of Gujarat called Dwarka. When he left the planet, he sank that city into the sea. It was built on an island, or it was built off the coast. Recently, in the last, not very long, within the last 25 years, they have found the ruins of that city under the sea. The archaeologists have found it, and they're going through it now in their scuba gear, because that's where it is, under the sea. So Krishna said to Arjuna, I will give you, because Arjuna was his cousin and his closest friend, favorite devotee. Who was Arjuna? Arjuna was Yudhishthira's brother. He was one of the Pandavas. But Arjuna was the number one archer on the planet. He was the number one fighter with a bow. He was famous the world over. He was famous even up in the heavenly realms. He was famous in the lower planets. He was famous everywhere. So Krishna said, Krishna did much to effect diplomacy between the two sides, but no diplomatic solution could be achieved. Kind of reminds you of the Middle East nowadays. Doesn't matter what they do, they cannot resolve it. And that will continue, I assure you. So Krishna said, I will not fight in the war, because I don't think that would be appropriate for me to take sides. But I will give you all of my armies. One side could take my armies. And one side could have me. I'll drive the chariot. Well, of course, Duryodhana, who was the head guy on the opposing side, the Kauravas, he wanted all the armies. In fact, his troops outnumbered the Pandavas 7-1. 7-1. Well, that's kind of a foregone conclusion in battle, that the one with seven times as many warriors, as many men, is going to win the battle. That's what one would think. Arjuna did not want. He had first pick. Why don't you take the armies? No, I don't think I'll take the armies. I think I'll take you, Krishna. I invite you to take the reins of my chariot. And Duryodhana was behind the scenes. Yes! I get all the warriors. I mean, we're talking thousands. Thousands of men. And Arjuna gets Krishna to drive the chariot. No weapons. Arjuna has weapons. Krishna will not pick up a weapon. Well, what good is he? He'd be the best fighter on the battlefield. Had fought many battles. If you read Mahabharata, if you read Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna fought many battles. Very hard man to beat. He's God, after all. So he wouldn't fight in this battle, but he will drive your chariot. Do not let this metaphor be lost on you. Most of us here are not warriors. Thank God. Some of you might be in the army. Maybe you were in the army. Maybe you were warriors. Some of you might be policemen. I don't know. But most of us are not warriors. But still, the metaphor is wonderful. So, what is the first thing Arjuna say near the beginning of the battle? He says, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. Senayor ubayor madye ratam stapayame chuta. So, Krishna draws the chariot between the two armies. What does he see? There Arjuna could see within the midst of the armies of both parties his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, fathers-in-law, and well-wishers. That's who was on the opposing side. Now, there was also some of those people on his side. That's what he was looking at. Now, I'm sure none of you have any experience of having to battle your families in this life who go against what you want to do or opposed to your ideas. I'm sure that's never happened to any of us here. It happens all the time, doesn't it? My mother, God rest her soul, was so against Krishna that she couldn't even say Krishna. She could only say Krishna. She could not say the word Krishna. Krishna wouldn't even let her say Krishna. You and those Hare Krishnas. I say, say Krishna, Mom. Say Krishna. Krishna. So, see, I knew from the beginning it's not going to work. Anyway. So, that's who was there to fight. So what happened when Arjuna saw that? When the son of Kunti, Kunti was his mother's name, and what's Kunti's relationship to Krishna? Aunt? Aunt. And Kunti is Krishna's aunt, so they're, Krishna and Arjuna are actually cousins. When the son of Kunti, Arjuna, saw all these different grades of friends and relatives, he became overwhelmed with compassion and spoke thus. He said, "My dear Krishna, seeing my friends and relatives present before me in such a fighting spirit, I feel the limbs of my body quivering and my mouth drying up." Have you ever felt the limbs of your body quiver and your mouth dry up? Is it a good sign? No. It isn't. And you feel that sinking feeling and you don't have enough air to breathe. There's several symptoms that usually go with it. You begin to perspire. That's what he felt. And then what happened? It goes on for a while here. I'm not going to read all that because I'm going to just go first chapter, second chapter, and then I'm going to go to the 18th chapter. So what happened then? Arjuna, having thus spoken on the battlefield, cast aside his bow and arrows, sat down on the chariot, his mind overwhelmed with grief. So what was he there to do? He was there to fight. But it was too much. This is not a good sign for the Pandavas, because Arjuna is their greatest warrior. And they're looking, and he just dropped his bow and arrows at the beginning of a battle before the first arrow was fired. And he tells Krishna, I cannot fight. So what does Krishna say? Yeah, you poor guy. I know how you feel. I feel the same way. Why don't we go back to the tent and relax? Why don't we do that? Did he say that? No, he didn't. What did he say? He said, do not yield to this degrading impotence. It does not become you. Give up such petty weakness of heart and arise, O chastiser of the enemy. because he got the reaction he didn't expect. Why is Krishna speaking to him like this? Because Arjuna has in that moment chosen to do what? Give up his dharma. Give up his duty. Give up his obligation. It's too hard. It's just too hard. I can't do it. You know what you do? When the alarm rings at 6 a.m., oh my God, this is too hard. I don't want to go there. I don't want to get out of my bed. It's raining. I don't even like my job. I hate my boss. It's too hard. I'm going to stay home. Do you do that? You want to do that. Do you do it? No. Why? Because it's your duty. That's why. You go. You do what you have to do. I just spent 2 months traveling on the road. I went to 7 cities. I saw many people. I'm tired now. I just got back 2 days ago. And I had to spend a lot of time in hotels and airports and you name it. Was it easy? No. Did I do it? Yes. Why? Because I said I would do it. It was my duty. It was my dharma. So I did it. Same here. So Arjuna doesn't want to fight. But that's what he does. He's a Kshatriya. Kshatriya is a warrior. That's his duty. So this is too hard because my relatives are opposing me. Do we always follow what our relatives tell us to do? No. Sometimes our loved ones give us good advice and we try to follow it. Do they always give us good advice? No. Well, maybe yours do, in which case you're very blessed. But usually not the case. When I was a child, I was given up for adoption when I was born. 6 months later, I was adopted. And as a child, I looked at my adoptive mother and I said to myself, whatever she tells you to do, just do the opposite. I don't mean like tie your shoe and practical things. I mean like meaningful things. Whatever she tells you, just do differently and you'll be okay. I said this to myself as a child. And that was really good advice and I followed it. Because if I would have listened to her, I wouldn't be sitting here today. It never would have happened. So sometimes you have to use your own discretion and decide what the right course of action is according to your own dharma, your own duty, your own nature. What's another meaning for dharma? Nature. Your God-given nature. Everybody has a nature, right? Should we act in harmony with our nature or against our nature? What would be best, do you think?
In harmony.
Act in harmony. If we don't act in harmony with our nature, what happens to us?
Destroyed. Correct.
Instead of having an integrated being, it causes disintegration of the being. Right? And then later on in life, you have what's called the midlife crisis, or you get very ill. Get some serious disease. I always find it kind of interesting how people go, oh my God, I got cancer. I don't understand how this happened to me. And in my mind I'm thinking, I don't understand how it didn't happen to me sooner. Why? Because I'm not compassionate. No. because this person has not followed their heart. They have not followed their dharma. They have not acted in harmony with their nature for 40 years. And now I have cancer. Where is the surprise? It's not a surprise. So following your dharma, your duty, your nature, is essential. And if you're not doing it, sometimes we have to take jobs out of practicality. We have to be practical. We have to pay the bills. I understand. I've taken all kinds of jobs I didn't like in my lifetime to be practical. So I'm not out of touch with you on that. But we don't want to spend a lifetime doing that. Not recommended by Krishna. Okay? So, Krishna says, how have these impurities come upon you? They are not at all befitting a man who knows the value of life. That's what he says. So you're not acting in harmony with your nature. Now, here is the crucial point of the Bhagavad Gita. This is the turning point, right? You know the turning point? This is the turning point. Arjuna said, now I am, because they went back and forth. We didn't read all the back and forth, the toing and froing in the conversation. Arjuna came up with every excuse in the book. Have you ever come up with every excuse in the book? I bet you have. Bet you have. So did he. He even suggested he go to the forest and become a tyagi, a renunciate, a yogi, and practice yoga, sitting on a blanket, or tiger skin, cushion mat. He's going to practice yoga. And Krishna went, stifled a laugh. No, he didn't really, but of course he did. Who's this guy who's going to practice yoga? He's a king. He's young. He's not old. He's young. He's vigorous. You know, he's got wives and family. Maybe when he's old, he can go practice yoga. No. So here's the turning point. This is what Arjuna said. This is your turning point too. Not just his. It's yours, it's mine, it's all of ours. Listen carefully. Now I am confused about my duty and have lost all composure because of weakness. In this condition, I am asking you to tell me for certain what is best for me. Now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. Wow. That's it now. That first part's over. And now, you know how they say, today's the first day of the beginning of the rest of your life. That's that. Because if he actually acts according to what he just said here, from here on in, his life will change forever, will it not? Assuming Krishna gives him instruction, everything will change. In 1972, in June or July, this book came in the post for me. Well, the one with the pretty picture on the cover of Krishna and Arjuna, the original one. This is a small one, same book. Bhagavad Gita. I sent away for it. I think from the back of the incense package. And this was the turning point for me. When the book came, I went, wow. And every day, I would go, every morning, I was self-employed then, as I am now. I was 21, 22 years old, and I'd go to the lake. Sometimes I paddle out into the middle of the lake on a rubber dinghy, in the morning, of course, and I'd read the Bhagavad Gita. Sometimes I'd sit on the bank of the lake on the grass and I'd read the Bhagavad Gita. And that's what I did. And what happened? Everything changed. My entire life changed once I read the Bhagavad Gita. Nothing would be the same again. So what Arjuna is saying here, that's exactly what happened in my life. And I never looked back. Was it easy just to get up and change everything and go off? And no, it was hard. It was real hard. But I had to do it. There's no choice. Did I have a choice? Yes and no. I didn't have a choice. So now I am your disciple and a soul surrendered unto you. Please instruct me. So what happens? This is chapter 2, text 7. We're right at the beginning. 18 chapters. From here on in, Krishna assumes the role of the guru for Arjuna. Now I'm your disciple. Before I've been your friend, your confidant, your cousin, different things, your brother-in-law. I married your sister, Krishna, so I'm your brother-in-law. But now I'm your disciple. I'm surrendering. Because I'm confused. I don't know what to do. Has anyone here ever been confused in their life? Show of hands. If somebody doesn't put their hand up, you're lying, okay? Because we've all been confused. We all have. It's the nature of a soul caught in the material world to become confused. Sometimes, all the time. Sometimes, on occasion. Why are we confused? Because we are under the grip of Maya. Maya is the external energy of God, the material energy, the illusory energy. And what is the single most obvious effect of Maya? It makes you think what? I am this body. This body is me. That's it. All begins there, my friends. Once you think you're the body, you know, you're headed toward the end, which is death. But we're not the body, we're the soul. So Krishna, from this point forward, explains what? The entire yoga system. That's what the Bhagavad Gita is. It's the yoga system. What is the yoga system? How to lose weight? And how to exercise nicely? Is that the yoga system? No! Contrary to popular belief. Yoga means union of the soul with God. That is yoga. How the soul can link with God in his constitutional position, in his eternal relationship with God. That is yoga. Do we have any words in the English language that reflect yoga? Yes. In a farming place like Ireland, one would yoke the bull to the plow and plow the field. Or they may not yoke the bull, they yoke the horses to the carriage. Correct? That is from the word yoga. Sanskrit root. Okay. So he explains the yoga system in one way? No. he gives various ways and means and methods of, well, if you can't do this, do that. If you can't do this, do that. Oh, is that too hard? Well, then do this. That's what he says throughout the rest of the Bhagavad Gita. Okay? I'm not going to fill that in today. When you pick up a Bhagavad Gita before you leave, if you already have one, good. If you don't buy a Bhagavad Gita by the time I'm done, then I'm going to scratch my head. Because I can't imagine why you wouldn't. Okay. So what happens? We're going now to the... Oh, not yet. Sorry. Ahead of myself. So now Arjuna has surrendered. Right? Okay, we're good to go. He's surrendered. Now, you know, once people make up their mind and surrender, everything's good from there on in, isn't it? No. What do people do? Inevitably, they change their mind. Well, how soon from verse, chapter 2, verse 7, how soon after he surrenders to Krishna does he then change his mind? The next verse, 2:8. Well, that was fast. How to fix the mind on the goal and maintain it. Not easy. Oh, you think this guy, Arjuna, come on. He's a king. He's renowned. He's highly respected. Changes his mind. Next verse. What's he say? He says, I can find no means to drive away this grief, which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. Even if I win, I will not be able to drive this grief. Wait a second. Didn't you surrender a minute ago, Arjuna? And then he says, he continues, having spoken thus, Arjuna, the chastiser of the enemies. Why did they call him chastiser of the enemies? Because he never loses. He never loses. It's not like this guy, it's 60-40, whether he's going to win the battle. He never loses. In fact, what they don't tell you here is when they were incognito in the final year of exile, and he was in disguise, they came, many of these people who are opposing him now, the Kauravas, came and stole some cows that Arjuna was looking, well, I won't get into the whole thing, but he was helping to look after. And Arjuna came out in disguise. They were thinking he might be there. And he whooped them all. He beat them all and drove them off. He could have killed them there and then, but he didn't. So it's not like he hasn't fought them and beat them before. He has. So you see, what's happening here is he's fallen under illusion. Because he wouldn't have given this argument 6 months ago. But he is now. That shows you it shows you the subtlety of the illusory energy to ensnare you in its grip. So you can't think clearly. Even you, the right decision is in front of you. You can see yourself. That is the right decision. That is the wrong decision. Which one I'm going to make? I'm going to make this one. The wrong one. Why? I don't know. I can't help it. I'm just going to go with the wrong decision. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita in another part that even, how does it go, Prabhu? Even the intelligence of a man of who is committed, of a yogi of determination, will be swept away by the material energy, by the illusory potency of Maya. This is Arjuna. His intelligence is being swept away. Who's driving his chariot? God. And still, can you imagine? God's driving your chariot and you can't make the right decision. Where does that leave the rest of us? If that's Arjuna's plight. My goodness. We have a lot of odds stacked against us, don't we? There's got to be a way around it. Okay. So, he says, Arjuna says, chastiser of the enemies tells Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight. And he fell silent. Did he make the right decision? Why does he call him Govinda? Now, Krishna is God. How many names does he have? You cannot count them. You could read them in the Vishnu Sahasranam, which are the 1,000 names. There's a few extra, I think. How many names do you have? 1, 2, maybe 3. If you're Spanish, you might have 6. God has hundreds and hundreds of names. Because he's coming. Makes sense. What does Govinda mean? Why is he addressing him in this regard here? Having spoken thus, Arjuna, the chastiser of enemies, told Krishna, Govinda, I shall not fight. I think that's the first time he called him Govinda in the Bhagavad Gita. Govinda means what? Controller of the senses. Control, master the cows, but in this case, yes, the senses. Go means senses. Why did he call him the master of the senses? Because he lost the run of his own senses, Arjuna. So, everything means something. Don't think anything that you read here doesn't mean something. It means something, always, on so many levels. Okay, he's not fighting. So, what does Krishna say? The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, no, first of all, he says, I didn't actually put this on my list, but they're such great verses. I'll read them. O descendant of Bharata, at that time Krishna smiling in the midst of both armies. Krishna smiling now. Why is he smiling? Because Arjuna just said, I'm a soul surrendered unto you. And in the next breath he said, I'm not surrendered unto you. I'm not going to fight. Eh? You ever change your mind that quickly? I don't know. Maybe you did. So Krishna, smiling in the midst of both armies, spoke the following words to the grief-stricken Arjuna. He said, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Bhagavan, said, while speaking learned words, you are mourning for what is not worthy of grief. You know, you talk like an educated man, but you don't act like one. That's what he's saying. Those who are wise lament neither for the living or the dead. That's what he said. So now I'm not going to read all of this on the soul and the body. You can read that on your own. But because the soul is eternal and only the body dies, that is what Krishna is referring to, right? So yeah, I made a note here. Arjuna is explaining all of this in terms of himself. Well, this is good for me. This is comfortable for me. This is what I would prefer. This is what I think I'm going to do. What happened to duty? as Shakespeare would say, methinks he doth protest too much. That's what Arjuna is doing here. He's protesting too much. Okay. Now we'll go to all the way to chapter 18, text 12. Now, Krishna explains, and he explains this in many places throughout the Bhagavad Gita. You must do your duty and offer the fruits of your action to God. Why? Otherwise, action binds one to the world. Everything you do, when you act out of ego, your own ego, it generates what? Karma. Karmic reaction. What kind of karmic reaction? This is the best verse. I love this verse. Anishtam mishtam mishram cha. Isn't that lovely? Anishtam ishtam mishram cha. Trividam karmana phanam. Karma is of three kinds. Anishtam, ishtam, mishram. Anishtam means undesirable, bad karma. Ishtam, desirable. Ishtam means desired, wanted. Mishram, mixed. Mixed karma. Yeah, so-so. Muscle menos. So, for one who is not renounced, for one who is attached to the fruits of his or her actions, the threefold fruits of action, desirable, undesirable, and mixed, accrue after death. But those who are in the renounced order of life have no such result to suffer or enjoy. Renounced means detaching yourself from the result, giving all results to God, doing your duty because you must do it, and offering all the results to God. When your actions are offered to God, excuse me, what kind of karma does it generate? None. Now, does that mean only if you're a devotee of Krishna? No. You could be a devotee of any manifestation of God, and you give everything to God. Out of what? Love and devotion. Higher duty. Will you then generate karma? No. You want to. You won't. Sometimes they say, we don't believe in your religion, your Krishna religion. There's no religion here. No one here is following a religion. This is a science of karma, reincarnation of the soul, and the difference between matter and spirit. This is a science. It's Veda. It's knowledge. It's not a religion. It's not a relationship to dogma. It's an understanding of God. There's a difference. So, if you say, well, but I don't really want to worship Krishna, well then worship God the way you see God. You still have to follow the science. Right? So this is not a sentimental, cheerleading pep rally. It doesn't work like that. It's based on eternal principles. Okay? Now I'm going to go to 18:17. One, here's the verse. One who is not motivated by false ego, whose intelligence is not entangled, though he kills people in this world, does not kill, nor is he bound by his actions. Wow, no, that's a heavy statement. What does it mean that we can just go kill anybody we want? And there's no reaction? Not exactly. So let's read the first part on that one, because I'm sure some of you are going, what did he just say? In this verse, this is Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, the Lord informs Arjuna that the desire not to fight arises from false ego. I just want to do what I want to do, because that's what I want to do. Is that not ego? But what's your higher duty? Well, I don't care about that. I just want to do what I want to do. That's ego. Okay? Arjuna thought himself to be the doer of action. But he did not consider the supreme sanction within and without. If one does not know that a super sanction is there, why should he act? But one who knows the instruments of work, himself as the worker, and the Supreme Lord as the supreme sanctioner, is perfect in doing everything. Such a person is never in illusion. Personal activity and responsibility arise from false ego and godlessness, or a lack of Krishna consciousness, a lack of God consciousness. Anyone who is acting in Krishna consciousness under the direction of the super soul, we said that at the beginning, God in the heart, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even though killing, does not kill, nor is he ever affected by the reaction of such killing. When a soldier kills under the command of a superior officer, he is not subject to be judged in a court of law, is he? He's not. But if a soldier kills on his own personal account, then certainly he will certainly be judged in a court of law. So this is the difference. Arjuna and these other people were warriors. A warrior is meant to do certain things, right? Suppose he doesn't want to do it, then he's shirking his duty. He's not doing what he's supposed to do. Suppose you see a man beating his wife on the street, right? And you're going, oh my God. And standing right there is a policeman. What would you do? You probably go right up to the policeman and say, look what's happening here. You need to stop this. Why would you do that? Because that's his job. That's his duty. Right? That's what he's there for. Suppose he said to you, Oh, I don't really want to get involved. It's quite violent. And it's a personal matter. Looks like family. I don't want to get in the middle of that. What would you say? I think you chose the wrong profession, my friend. You're supposed to get in the middle of it. That's your job. Now, you may not want to get in the middle of it, and we may understand that. But for him, that's his duty. That's his dharma. He chose it. Right? So same thing here with the warriors. Oh, again, I say, we are not warriors, so we may not be involved in killing people. In Arjuna's case, that was part of his accepted dharma. You must understand that. Okay? Krishna's not promoting killing in as much as he's promoting the execution of proper duty, proper dharma. Okay? Everybody understand that point? It's a very important point. Okay. So, ego. He doesn't want to do it because he doesn't want to do it. I don't want to do it. It's too hard.
I want to do something easy.
Of course you do. But you must do it. Now, there's two kinds of ego. Inflated ego and deflated ego. What is that? A deflated ego, no, I'm not really referring to Arjuna and Krishna. I'm just kind of doing a side note here. People will shirk the duty out of inflated ego or deflated ego. Deflated ego means, oh, I can't do that. I'm no good. You know, I wouldn't be able to do that. You know, I'm not really capable. This is somebody who's always criticizing themselves, putting themselves down, feeling insecure, insufficient, inadequate, unworthy. That's deflated ego. Right? Anything you do with that attitude, you, guess what? You're still acting out of ego. Oh, no, I'm not. I'm not puffed up. I'm not arrogant. No, no, you're the opposite. It's still ego. And then inflated ego is what you think it is. Well, that's beneath me. I wouldn't do that. I'm too important for that. I'm too valuable. I'm arrogant. I'm beyond all these people. That's inflated ego. Which one's the best one? Which one do you choose? Neither. They're both products of illusion. Are they not? One is a weakness, and one is an overconfidence, an overreach. They're both illusion. So what do? You act in accordance with Dharma. You do your duty. Always, always, always do your duty. Even when you don't want to do your duty. Like when you get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and when the alarm rings, like I said earlier. We spend our lifetime doing our duty. And so we should. Okay. Now, Prabhu, how much time do I have? Pardon? 4:45? Oh, you're very generous. Because I'm not quite finished. Are you still awake? Do I still have you? Or have I lost you?
Yes.
Okay. Just a bit more here. Okay, 18, 26 to 28. Now we'll just touch, we're only going to touch on the three modes of nature. If you understand the three modes of nature, before in my life, I was reading every spiritual book I could get my hands on since I had my awakening at age 19. So now I was at age 22, as I've mentioned, and I had this book, the Bhagavad Gita, in my hands, and I started reading this. I said, humans don't talk like this. They don't. This is God talking. I never heard anybody speak like this. This is God. I knew it. Actually, I knew it 2 years earlier because I saw a picture of Krishna on a Krishna book on somebody's coffee table. And I picked it up and it said, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I thought, whoa. I opened the book. I read one paragraph somewhere randomly in the middle of the book that explained that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, dot, I don't remember the rest of it, dot, dot, dot. I read the paragraph and my friend says, come on, we gotta go. And I said, okay. Put the book down. From that moment, I believed completely that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And I've never changed. And all I read was his name and a short paragraph. So I guess I was probably a devotee of Krishna in a past life, do you think? Probably. So, modes of nature. when I first read about the three modes of nature in the Bhagavad Gita, if you only understood that in the Bhagavad Gita and you understood nothing else, your life is perfect. Your life will be sublime. I'm telling you. It answers absolutely everything you need to know. It's there. So, let's touch on that. In terms of action, the three modes of action. 18:26. One who performs his duty without association with the modes of material nature. What does that mean? Like Arjuna was getting pulled down into illusion. That's what he means there, right? Without false ego, we just touched on that, with great determination and enthusiasm, without wavering in success or failure. Why? Because you do the duty, whether you're succeeding or failing. You still do it, and it must be done. He is said to be a worker in the mode of goodness. Sattva-guna, mode of goodness. Those are the qualifications for a worker or a person of action in the mode of goodness. Correct? So, what about the one in the mode of passion? Understand that the vast majority of people in this world are in the mode of passion. Rajo-guna, rajas. The vast majority, okay? Some are in the mode of goodness, some are in the mode of ignorance, and all of these are in the mode of passion. It's mostly everybody. And then, of course, we're mixed. It's not pure mode. It's mixed together. The worker who is attached to work and the fruits of work, desiring to enjoy those fruits, who is greedy, always envious of others, impure, and moved by joy and sorrow, is said to be in the mode of passion. Do you know anybody like that? Have you looked in the mirror this morning? No offense. That's most of us. Most of us. And if you're not like that today, you might have been like that yesterday. Because such and such happened. And the worker who is always engaged in work against the injunctions of the scripture, who is materialistic, obstinate, cheating, and expert in insulting others, who is lazy, always morose, and procrastinating, is said to be a worker in the mode of ignorance. Whoa, that's an indictment right there. Well, that's none of us, so we're okay on that one, right? We've never stepped into that mud puddle, have we? Yeah, I think we have on occasion, but not normally, right? Okay, so there's the... Now, the three modes of nature are explained in so much detail in the Bhagavad Gita, and under so many different categories. It is absolutely enlightening, because you'll understand how every action you are performing yourself, or you are watching being performed by others, exactly what category it fits into. And you can, I don't know how you can free yourself more quickly beyond chanting Hare Krishna from the modes of nature just by understanding them. Okay. Okay. Another thing Krishna points out, he says, 18:53. In this world, every endeavor is covered by some fault or flaw. If you say, well, I'm not going to do it because it won't be perfect, or I need to execute things perfectly, good luck. Yes, you should try to execute things perfectly to the best of your ability, no question. But if you think that here in the material world things can actually be perfectly executed, you are mistaken. And he gives the example that fire, just as fire is covered by smoke. In another place he gives the example as a mirror is covered by dust. because they're not perfect in the material world. But though they are not perfect, we must act anyway. Right? In 1853, he says, attraction, repulsion. These are the two forces. These are the dualities of life. Let's take the allegory of Adam and Eve, right, in the Bible. They're living in paradise. Garden of Eden. Sounds good. How could you not want to live there? Kind of like Tenerife, I guess. But nicer. And he says, but look, I just have one condition, just one thing. One little prohibition. Do not eat the fruit from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Do not eat the fruits of the from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. Just that. You think they could not eat that one tree's fruit after all the trees but laden with fruit? No. And what does that mean, tree of the knowledge of good and evil? It means duality. It means attraction, repulsion. In this world, we are drawn to so many things and we become attached. That's our attraction. And we are repulsed by so many things. People who are protesting against something, their attachment is that we're against this. I am repulsed by that. That is a cause for bondage. If you are overly pro this or overly negative con that, both are situations for bondage. Bondage means you will suffer karmic reaction and you will come back again for another lifetime. That's what it means. You must learn to be detached for both sides, positive and negative. That's where Adam and Eve went wrong. As soon as they ate that fruit, they went into the mindset of duality. That's what happened in the allegory. Okay. So, finally, I'll go to the end now. Krishna says, you must act according to your nature. We are compelled to act according to our nature. So act in harmony with your nature. That's what he tells Arjuna. You're a warrior, he convinces him. Act like what you are. This battle is being fought on religious principles. I want you to fight this battle. It's the right thing to do. And Krishna wanted to remove the burden of all of these armies from the earth. There were too many armies, too many warmongers, too many conquerors. It's like too many politicians nowadays. Similar. Good analogy for this country. Way too much representation. So that's what he was telling them. And then he says, you can work under my protection. So let's go to 57. We're almost there. Krishna says, in all activities, just depend on me and work always under my protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So the thing I have not mentioned is devotion, but you'll say that in a minute. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over all the obstacles of conditional life by my grace. If, however, you do not work in such consciousness, but act through false ego, not listening to me, all will be lost. So he's telling him now at the end, what will happen if he continues to not do his duty. So then he says, thus I have explained to you knowledge which is the most confidential. Because he's telling him the science of the self. Deliberate on this fully and then do what you wish to do. Oh. What does he say to Arjuna? Do what you wish to do. You mean God's not a control freak? God doesn't demand you do exactly what he tells you to do? No, he doesn't. He says, deliberate fully. Think about this, and then do what you wish to do. I won't force you. Why? Because you have free will. What'd you get that? From God, who loves you. Anybody who tells you they love you and then they try to control all your actions, guess what? They don't love you. They only say they love you. They love you conditionally. Is Krishna expressing love conditionally? No. He's not. I've enlightened you now, Arjuna. Did you get it? Do what you wish to do. What are you going to do, by the way? Right? Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you the supreme instruction, the most confidential knowledge of all. It is for your benefit. Wow. Is that how your friend treats you? Yeah. Does your friend not give you the best advice your friend can give you out of love? Unless they're trying to control something, yes, they do. That's friendship, isn't it? That's what Krishna did to Arjuna. Now, here it is. Here it is, my friends. This is it. This is the verse. There's two or three of them, but this is the one here. Manmana bhava madbhakto madhyajima namaskuru. That's it. That's all you gotta know. If you do that, your life will be perfect. Manmana, always think of me. Bhava madbhakto, become my devotee. Madhyaji, worship me. Mam namaskuru, bow down. Pranam, pay your respects. If you can't bow down in front of God, genuinely, happily, and sincerely, then we got some kind of an ego problem going here. I don't know, deflated, inflated, I don't know. It's easy to bow down. So that's it. Always think of me. Become my devotee. Worship me. Offer your homage unto me. Thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this. I promise you this. Why? Why would you promise me this? Because you are my very dear friend. That's why. Who are you? No. You and you and you and you and you. All of you. All. Not just Arjuna. Right? Then he says, abandon all varieties of religion and just surrender unto me. I will deliver you from all sinful reaction. Do not fear. I will deliver you from all negative karma. Don't even worry. From all religion, from all manner of ways of doing things, just surrender to me. I'll look after you. Be my devotee. And then finally, what does Arjuna do? We still don't know the answer. Arjuna says, "My dear Krishna, O infallible one." Why is Krishna infallible? He's God. That's why. Are humans infallible? I don't think so. Sorry. My illusion is now gone. I have regained my memory by your mercy. I lost my head. He lost his head. Now he regained his head. Came back by your mercy. I am now firm and free from doubt, and I am prepared to act according to your instructions. Wow. He did it. He's about to pick up the bow and arrows from the floor of the chariot. And Sanjaya says, like the last verse, isn't it? Wherever there is Krishna, the master of all mystics, wherever there is Arjuna, the supreme archer, there will certainly also be opulence, victory, extraordinary power, and morality. That's it. So, again I say, why not invite Krishna to take the reins of your chariot? We are all going through the world. We have a chariot. And we don't know how to steer it all the time. You may say, I came into this world and there was no manual. If I go to the computer store and buy a computer, they give me a manual. Operator's manual. Operator's manual. Bhagavad Gita. This is the operator's manual. Don't say you didn't get one. Now, Prabhu, do we have a lot of Bhagavad Gita's available here? Oh, there we go. We solved the problem. We have enough operator manuals for everybody. I'm sure they're being sold at a very reasonable price. Or by donation? €5. Now that is a value at twice the price. So please, Prabhus, get a Bhagavad Gita today if you do not have one. So, I guess I went a little bit over. Thank you for your kind attention. Do we have any questions? Clarification? And Dokas?
Question would be for a moment about when Arjuna was shifting from his duty. His duty should be like wedding all life. Maybe there was a moment when he was like thinking, should I kill him?
So what's the question?
So the question would be, should the duty would be like lifelong, like a marriage?
Yes, your duty is lifelong. Now you might have different things that you have to do within the scope of your duty. But your duty is a reflection of your nature. We have a lifelong duty to God, to the world around us, to others. You have a duty to family too. If you have a family, you have a duty to family. But duty is lifelong. I mean, sometimes we take a holiday and so we don't have a duty at work for 2 weeks. But that duty will resume when we go back to work. And your fundamental nature that God has given you through guna and karma in this lifetime that exists throughout your lifetime. So guna means your natural qualities and karma means the karma you generated from past lives, which has given you the body that you have, the birth that you have, It's brought us all together here. So, because we're all trying to get past the karma. Anything else? Want to?
How can you be sure that it is, as Krishna is giving you the instruction on the chariot, or it isn't just the mind, or you know, the inflated ego, or the deflated ego?
Well, you know, what I say to my clients is, I usually just use the term intuition, because they're not all necessarily Krishna conscious, but you cannot go wrong if you follow your heart, which is God's voice, God in the heart. The reason people go wrong, I say, well, did you listen to your intuition? Yeah, I followed my intuition and it didn't turn out right. No. Your desire to have a certain thing happen got clouded the waters of intuition. That's what goes wrong. Because I really want this to go the way I want it to go. You're not following your intuition. You're not listening to God in the heart. Because your desire is precipitating your action. It's like anything else, Prabhu. You have to practice. You have to practice over and over and over. And you'll get the hang of it. And chant, purify your heart. Chant the Hare Krishna mantra. I've said to many, many people, okay, you're in this relationship. Uh-huh. It's not going well for you. No. So why did you go into this relationship? Well, he was this, he was that, he was like this, and like that. Okay. You liked all that, right? Yeah. And what did your intuition tell you within the 5 minutes of meeting him? Oh, that this guy would be trouble. Oh, your intuition told you he'd be trouble. Yeah. Did you listen? No. Why? Oh, he was so attractive. That's, you know, when you get to the bottom of it, it doesn't take long to get to the bottom of it. That's what happens. People get swept away with desire. What the ego wants. And then you know what happens. Ow, that hurts. Yeah. It's called reaction. Okay? Hare Krishna.
Okay.